This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Ghosts of the Shadow Market, Book 7, The Land I Lost, by Cassandra Clare and Sarah Rees-Brennan. Read by Melissa Fumero.
New York, 2012. The sky was soft gray with evening, stars not yet out. Alec Lightwood was napping because he and his parabatai had been out fighting croucher demons all last night. And Jace Herondale, famed among the Nephilim as a master strategist, apparently thought about a dozen demons was a fair estimate for definitely 37 demons. Alec had gone around counting them out of spite. "Give yourself a break, should be Sleeping Beauty," Magnus had told him. "I need to make a potion, and Max is scheduled for his evening temptation." Alec woke in a nest of lavender and green silk sheets. Under the door of the bedroom, eerie silver lights played. There was a smell of sulfur and the hiss of a demon and the sound of beloved voices. Alec smiled against his pillow. Just as he was about to roll out of bed, letters of fire appeared on the wall. "Alec, we need your help. For years we have searched for a family in peril, and the truth behind why they are in danger. We believe we have found a lead in the shadow market of Buenos Aires. But there is unrest between the shadow hunters and the downworlders of this city. This shadow market is guarded like a throne room, run by a werewolf known as the Queen of the Market. She says her doors are closed to every soul associated with the Nephilim. Every soul except for Alexander Lightwood, who she says she has need of. We need to enter the shadow market. Lives are at stake. Will you open the doors for us? Will you come? Jem and Tessa." Alec stared at the letter for a long moment. Then he sighed, fished a sweater up from the floor, and weaved his way out of their bedroom, still half asleep. In their main room, Magnus stood with one elbow casually propped against their mantle, decanting a vial of turquoise liquid into a jar of black powder. His green-gold eyes were narrowed with focus. The dark-worn floorboards and the woven silk rug alike were littered with their son Max's toys. Max himself was sitting on the rug wearing a sailor suit with elaborate navy ribbons to match his hair, tightly embracing Chairman Meow.
"You are my Meow friend," he told the chairman solemnly, squeezing him.
"Meow,"
Chairman Meow protested. He had lived a life of torment since Max learned to walk. The pentagram had been drawn a safe distance away from the rug. Silvery light and mist rose from within the pentagram, shrouding its inhabitant in shimmering fog. The demon's long, writhing shadow fell dark against their green wallpaper and family pictures. Magnus raised an eyebrow.
"Ease up," he suggested to the pentagram. "It's like someone loaned overly enthusiastic kids a dry ice machine for their high school production of Demon Oklahoma in here."
Alec grinned. The silvery mist dissipated enough to see the demon Elias in the pentagram, his tentacles drooping in a sulky fashion.
"Child," he hissed to Max, "you know not of what dark lineage you come. You are naturally inclined to evil. Join me, infernal foundling, in my revels and..."
"My bappa is Ultra Magnus," Max announced proudly. "And daddy is a shadow hunter."
Alec thought Max had got the name Ultra Magnus from one of his toys. Magnus seemed to like it.
"Don't interrupt me when I'm promising you dark demonic delights," the demon Elias said fussily.
"Why are you always interrupting me?"
Max brightened at the word demonic.
"Uncle Jay says we will kill all the demons," he reported with joy. "All the demons."
"Well, have you considered that your Uncle Jace is a hurtful person?" said the demon. "Always rudely stabbing everyone and sarcastic."
Max scowled. Love Uncle Jace. Hate demons.
With his free hand, Magnus picked up a marker and drew another blueberry on the whiteboard to show Max had successfully resisted today's demonic wiles. 10 blueberries, and Max got a reward of his choosing. Alec crossed the floor to where Magnus stood, considering the whiteboard. Carefully, since Magnus was still holding a bubbling jar, Alec slid his arms around Magnus's waist, linking his hands together over the embossed buckle of Magnus's belt. The t-shirt Magnus was wearing had a dramatic scoop neckline, so Alec put his face down in the smooth, bare expanse of skin and breathed in the smell of sandalwood and spell ingredients.
"Hi," he mumbled.
Magnus reached back with his free hand, and Alec felt the slight, sweet pull of rings in his hair.
"Hi yourself. Couldn't sleep?"
"I slept," Alec protested.
"Listen, I have some news."
He filled Magnus in on the message Jem Carstairs and Tessa Gray had sent. The family they were searching for, the shadow market they could not enter without his help. As Alec spoke, Magnus gave a little sigh and leaned against him, one of the small, unconscious gestures that meant the most to Alec. It reminded him of the first day he had ever touched Magnus, drawn close to and kissed another man, someone even taller than he was, his body lean and lithe and right against Alec's. At the time, he thought he felt dizzy with relief and joy because he was finally touching someone he wanted to be touched by, when he had thought he might never have that. Now he thought he'd felt that way because it was Magnus, that even then he'd known. Now the gesture spoke of all the days since the first. When he felt Magnus relax against him, he felt like he could relax too. Whatever this strange task Jem and Tessa needed him for, he could do it. Then he would come home. As Alec fell silent, Chairman Meow made a break for freedom from Max's loving stranglehold, streaking across the floor through the door Alec had left open and into Alec and Magnus's bedroom, where Alec suspected he would be hiding under the bed for the rest of the night. Max stared sadly after the cat, then looked up and grinned, his teeth tiny pearls. He launched himself at Alec as if he had not seen him for several weeks. Alec always got the same enthusiastic greeting, whether he was back from a trip, from patrolling, or had simply been in the other room for 5 minutes.
"Hey, Daddy!"
Alec took a knee and opened his arms to scoop Max up.
"Hey, my baby."
He stood with Max curled against his chest, a warm, soft bundle of ribbons and round limbs, Max's gurgling laughter in his ears. When Max was tiny, Alec used to marvel at how neatly his little body fit in the crook of Alec's arm. He'd scarcely been able to imagine Max getting bigger. Alec needn't have worried. Whatever size his kid was, he was always a perfect fit for Alec to hold. Alec tugged at the front of Max's sailor suit.
"That's a lot of ribbons there, buddy."
Max nodded sadly.
"Too much ribbons."
"What happened to your sweater?"
"That's a fine question, Alexander. Allow me to unfold to you the tale." "Max rolled his sweater in the cat litter," Magnus related, "so he could look like Daddy. Thus, he must wear the sailor suit of shame. I don't make the rules. Oh, wait. Yes, I do."
He waved a reproving finger at Max, who laughed again and tried to grab for the glitter of rings.
"It's really inspiring to see you crazy kids making it work,"
chipped in Elias, the tentacle demon.
"I don't have much luck with romance. Everyone I meet is treacherous and heartless."
"Well, we are demons. Comes with the territory."
Magnus had insisted that warlocks needed to know what summoning demons entailed. He said that the more comfortable Max was with them, the less likely he was to be tricked or terrified when he summoned his first. Hence, the temptation lessons. Elias was not so bad as demons went, which meant he was still terrible. As Max had passed the pentagram, Alec had seen the wicked silver curve of one tentacle, moving hungrily close to the edge lest Max make a false move. Alec looked at Elias with narrowed eyes.
"Don't imagine I ever forget what you are," Alec said grimly. "I'm watching you."
Elias held up all his tentacles in surrender, scooting to the other side of the pentagram.
It was a reflex. I didn't mean anything by it.
Demons, said Max darkly.
Magnus banished Elias with a snap of his fingers and a murmur, then turned back to Alec.
So, they're asking for you in Buenos Aires, said Magnus.
Yeah, said Alec. I don't know why anyone at the market wants me specifically as opposed to any other shadow hunter.
Magnus laughed. I can see why someone might.
Okay, other than that, Alec grinned. I don't speak Spanish. Magnus could speak Spanish. Alec wished that Magnus could go with him, but one of them always tried to stay home with Max. Once, when Max was still a baby, there had been a terrible time when they were both forced to leave him. Neither of them wanted to repeat it. Alec was trying to learn Spanish, as well as several other languages. The Speak in Tongues rune didn't last and seemed like cheating. Downworlders from all over the world came to New York to consult with them these days, and Alec wanted to be able to talk with them properly. First on the list of languages he was trying to learn was Indonesian, for Magnus. Unfortunately, Alec wasn't great at languages. He was able to read them, but when he was talking, he found words difficult, no matter what the tongue. Max had picked up more words in various languages than Alec. It's fine, Magnus had commented once. I never knew any Lightwood but one who was good at languages. Which one? Alec had asked. His name was Thomas, Magnus said. Tall as a tree. Very shy. Not a green-eyed monster like the other Lightwoods you've mentioned? Oh, said Magnus. There was a bit of the monster in him. Magnus had elbowed him and laughed. Alec remembered a time when Magnus never talked about the past, when Alec thought it meant he was doing something wrong or Magnus didn't care. Now he understood it was only that Magnus had been hurt before, and afraid Alec would hurt him too. I thought I might bring Lily, he told Magnus. She can speak Spanish, and I thought it might cheer her up. She likes Jem. Nobody at any market would question Lily's presence. Everybody had heard of the Downworlder and Shadowhunter Alliance by now, and it was well known that members of the Alliance helped each other out. Magnus raised his eyebrows. Oh, I know Lily likes Jem. I've heard the nicknames. Max looked back and forth at their expressions, his face bright.
Bring back brother or a sister? Max hoped.
They had talked with Max about the idea of another kid, as they had talked to each other. Neither of them had expected Max would take to the idea so much. Max asked about the brother or the sister every time one of them left the house. Last Tuesday, Magnus had forestalled the question by yelling, "Not getting a baby, going to Sephora. There are no babies at Sephora," and bolting. One day at the park, Max had seized a pram with a mundane baby in it. Luckily, he had been glamored at the time, and the mundane mother thought it was a rogue gust of wind rather than Alec's little rogue. It would be nice for Max to have someone to grow up with. It would be nice to have another baby with Magnus. Alec remembered when he'd first held Max, how the world and Alec's heart had gone quiet and certain. Alec was waiting to be sure again. Alec's pause left Max obviously thinking there was room for negotiation here.
Bring back brother and a sister and a dinosaur? Asked Max.
Alec blamed Max's attitude on his Aunt Isabel, who kept telling him his bedtime was never. They were saved by Jace's signal, a fairy leaf folded plane striking the glass of the window. Alec gave Max a little kiss, in the midst of his curls but avoiding his horns. No, I'm going on a mission.
I come with you, Max proposed. I be a shadow hunter.
Max said that a lot, too, for which Alec blamed Max's Uncle Jace. Alec looked appealingly at Magnus over Max's head. Come to Papa, Blue Bottle, said Magnus, and Max went unsuspectingly to his open arms. Go get Lily, said Magnus. I'll have a portal set up for you. Max shrieked his outrage.
Down!
Magnus put him down gently. Alec paused at the door to catch one last glimpse of them. Magnus glanced up at him, touched his own heart with his ringed hand, and made a little flicking gesture. Alec grinned and opened his own hand to see the tiny blue spark of magic burning briefly there.
Hate you, Daddy, Max sulked.
That's a shame, said Alec. I love you both, he added quickly and closed the door on his own embarrassment.
The words were seldom easy for him to say, but he tried to say them whenever he was going on a mission, just in case they were the last words. Chase was waiting for him on the sidewalk, leaning against a sad-looking city tree, flipping a knife from palm to palm. As Alec reached the sidewalk, there was a sound from above. Alec looked up to see Magnus, but instead he saw Max's round face. Alec assumed Max wanted to get a glimpse of his magnificent Uncle Jace. Then he saw Max was looking at him. Big blue eyes mournful. He put his hand on the front of his sailor suit, then gestured to Alec the same way Magnus had, as if Max could do magic already. Alec pretended to see the magic spark in his hand and put the magic kiss in his pocket. Then he gave Max a last wave as he and Jace headed down the street.
"What was that about?" Jace asked. He wanted to come patrolling. Jace's face softened. "My good boy, he should!"
"No," said Alec. "And nobody will let you have your own kid until you stop putting other people's kids in bags meant for axes and trying to smuggle them out on patrol."
"I almost got away with it,
due to my supernatural speed and unmatched cunning," Jace claimed.
"No, you didn't," said Alec. "That bag was wriggling." Jace shrugged philosophically. "Ready for another round of heroically defending the world from evil? Or if it's a slow night, pranking Simon?"
"Actually, I can't," said Alec, and explained the message from Jem and Tessa.
"I'll come with you," Jace offered instantly.
"And leave Clary to run the Institute alone?" asked Alec, a week before her exhibition. Jace looked shaken by the force of this argument. "You're not letting Clary down. Lily and I can deal with whatever's going on," said Alec. "Besides, it's not like Jem and Tessa can't handle themselves. We'll be a team."
"Fine," said Jace reluctantly. "I guess three other fighters are an acceptable substitute for me." Alec thumped him swiftly on the shoulder with a fist, and Jace smiled. "Well," he said, "to the Hotel du Mort."
From the outside, the hotel's facade was grimy, the graffitied sign the dark brown of old blood. Lily had redecorated on the inside. Alec and Jace opened splintered double doors on a shining hall. The flight of stairs and the balcony above them had a glittering rail, gilt-painted iron fretwork depicting snakes and roses. Lily liked things to look like the 1920s, which she said was the best decade. The decor wasn't the only thing that had changed. Now there were hipsters in the know, and though Alec didn't understand the allure himself, there was a waiting list to be a party victim. A pair of legs was sticking out from under the curving flight of stairs. Alec strode over and peered into the shadowy alcove, seeing a man wearing suspenders, a blood-smudged shirt, and a grin.
"Hi," Alec said. "Just checking, is this a voluntary situation?"
The man blinked.
"Oh, yes, I signed the consent form."
"There's a consent form now?" Jace murmured.
"I told them they didn't have to do that," Alec murmured back.
"My fabulous fanged lady friend said I should sign it, otherwise the Clave would get stern with her."
"Are you the Clave?"
"No," said Alec.
"But Hetty said if I didn't sign the consent form, the Clave would look at her with those disappointed blue eyes." "Your eyes are very blue."
"And very disappointed," said Alec sternly.
"Are you bothering Alec?" demanded a vampire girl in the muslin gown of a Regency miss, running out of the double doors that led to the parlor. "Don't bother Alec."
"Oh, dear," said the man in delighted tones. "Is my mortal soul doomed? Are you about to visit your undead wrath upon me?"
Hetty snarled and dived under the stairs with a giggle. Alec averted his eyes and headed for the parlor, Jace falling in behind him. Jace let Alec take point when it came to the vampires. As head of the New York Institute, Jace reprimanding a vampire might sound like a threat. Jace and Alec had talked over how to make the city welcoming to all downworlders, now that New York was a refuge in the times of the Cold Peace. Through the parlor doors came the sound of music. Not Lily's usual jazz, but a pounding mix that sounded like rap and jazz combined. Inside the parlor were tufted chairs, a gleaming piano, and an elaborate set of turntables and wires. Bat Velasquez, the werewolf DJ, was sitting cross-legged on a plush velvet sofa,
fiddling with dials. In other cities, vampires and werewolves didn't get along. Things were different in New York. Elliot, second in command of the vampire clan, was dancing around in a happy circle by himself. His arms and dreadlocks waved to the beat like plants underwater.
"Is Lily up?" asked Alec.
Elliot suddenly looked hunted.
"Not yet. We had a bit of a late morning yesterday. There was an incident, well, more like a disaster."
"What caused this disaster?"
"Well," Elliot said, "me, like usual. But this time it really wasn't my fault. It was a total and complete accident that could have happened to anyone. You see, I have this regular Selkie Thursday night booty call."
Selkies were water fairies who shed their seal skins to assume human form. They were fairly rare. Alex subjected him to a judgmental stare.
"So this disaster could have happened to anyone with a regular Selkie booty call?"
"Yeah, exactly," said Elliot.
"Or like regular booty calls with two different Selkies. One of them found the other's sealskin in my wardrobe. There was a scene. You know how it is with Selkies."
Alec, Jace, and Bat shook their heads.
"Only one tiny wall fell down, but now Lily's all mad."
Lily had made Elliot her second in command because they were friends, not because Elliot had any aptitude for leadership. Sometimes Alec worried about the New York vampire clan. Bat said,
"This guy, why'd you have to suggest threesomes to everybody? Why are vampires like this?"
Elliot shrugged.
"Vampires love threesomes. Live long, get decadent."
"We aren't all the same, of course." His face brightened with a pleasant memory.
"The boss used to get very cross about decadence. But really, I'm ready to settle down. I think you and I and Maya..."
"My abuela wouldn't like you," Bat said firmly. "My abuela loves Maya. Maya's learning Spanish for her." Bat's slightly raspy voice went low and warm whenever he talked about Maya, the leader of the werewolves and his girlfriend. Alec couldn't blame him. Alec never worried about the werewolves. Maya always had everything under control.
"Speaking of Spanish," Alec said, "I'm going to Buenos Aires and I'm asking Lily to come with me since she's fluent. By the time Lily gets back, she'll have cooled off."
Elliot nodded. "A trip would be good for her," he said, his voice unusually serious.
"She hasn't been doing well lately. She misses the boss. Well, we all do, but it's different for Lily. It takes us like this sometimes."
He glanced at Alec and clarified.
"Immortals. We're used to seeing each other off and on through the centuries. Years go by, then someone's back, and it's just the way it was before. Because we stay the same, though the world doesn't. When someone dies, it takes us a while to process. You think to yourself, I wonder when I'll see him again. Then you remember, and it's a shock every time. You have to keep reminding yourself until you believe it. I'll never see him again."
There was an achingly sad note in Elliot's voice. Alec nodded. He knew how it would be one day when Magnus had to think, never again, about him. He knew how strong someone had to be to withstand the loneliness of immortality.
"Also, honestly, Lily could use some help with the clan."
"You could help her," said Alec, "if you were just a bit more responsible." Elliot shook his head.
"Not gonna happen. Hey! Mr. Head of the Institute, you're a leader. How about it? I make you a vampire, you help lead the clan, you stay gorgeous forever."
"That would be a gift to future generations," Jace remarked thoughtfully. "But no."
"Elliot!" Alec snapped. "Stop offering to make people immortal. We have spoken about this."
Elliot nodded, looking abashed, but smiling a tiny smile. From outside and above, a voice drifted down.
"I hear someone bossing people around. Alec?"
One of the most worrying things about the vampire clan was that speaking to them reasonably didn't work at all, but they were delighted to be told off. Rafael Santiago had really left a mark on these people. Alec walked over and peered out the open doors. Lily was standing on the balcony wearing rumpled pink pajamas with drawings of snakes and the words, "Rise and Strike," on them. She looked tired.
"Yeah," he said. "Hey, Jem asked me to come to Buenos Aires and help him out. Do you want to come with?"
Lily lit up.
"Do I want to come on a bro road trip with you? rushing to the aid of gorgeous damsel in distress, gem I'd love to climb 'em car stairs.
So, yes?
Lily's smile was wide enough to show fangs.
Hell yes.
She darted away from the balcony. Alec noted the door she went through and climbed the stairs. He waited a bit, leaning against the rail, then tapped on the door.
Come in!
He didn't come in, but he opened the door. The room inside was narrow as a cell, with stripped floorboards and walls bare except for a cross on a hook. This was the only room in the Hotel du Mort Lily hadn't redecorated. Lily was sleeping in Raphael's room again. Lily was wearing a leather jacket that had been Raphael's too. Alec watched as she fluffed her hot pink streaked hair, then kissed the cross for luck and headed out. Christian vampires were burned by a cross, but Lily was a Buddhist. The cross meant nothing to her, except that it had been Raphael's.
Do you... Alec coughed. Do you want to talk?
Lily tipped her head back to stare all the way up at him.
About feelings? Do we do that?
Preferably not, said Alec, which made her smile.
But we could.
Nah, Lily answered. Let's go on a road trip and see Hotties instead.
Where's that idiot Elliot?
She ran lightly down the stairs to the parlor, and Alec followed her.
Elliot, I'm leaving you in charge of the clan, said Lily. Bat, I'm stealing your girl.
Bat shook his head. Why are vampires like this? He murmured again.
Lily grinned.
For administrative purposes, Maya's running the Shadow Hunter and Downworlder Alliance until we get back.
I don't want to be in charge of the clan, Elliot wailed.
Please be a vampire and lead us, Jace. Please.
I used to walk in here and have to fight for my life as the place fell down around me, Jace mused. Now it's all velvet cushions and insistent offers of immortal beauty.
It's just one tiny bite, Elliot coaxed him. You'll like it.
Nobody likes getting all their blood sucked out, Elliot, Alec said severely. Both the vampires in the room smiled because he was telling them off, then looked upset because of what he was saying.
You only think that because Simon did it wrong, Lily argued. I've pointed out to him many times that he messed up everything for all of us.
Simon did fine, Jace muttered. I didn't like it, said Alec. I won't talk about this again. Let's get going.
Yes, Lily brightened. I'm very curious to see how the hottest shadow hunter in the world is doing.
I'm great, said Jace.
Lily tapped her foot.
Nobody's talking about you, Jason. Have you heard the phrase, tall, dark, and handsome?
Sounds like an old-fashioned saying, said Jace.
Sounds like something people used to say before I was born.
He grinned at Lily, who grinned back at him. Jace didn't just pull the pigtails of people he had crushes on. He pulled the pigtails of everyone in the world who he liked. This was something Simon still had not figured out over the years.
There are a lot of hot shadow hunters, said Elliot. That's the point of them, isn't it?
No, said Alec. We fight demons.
Oh, said Elliot. Right. I don't mean to brag. I'm just saying that if they made a book of hot shadow hunters, my illustration would be on every page, Jace said serenely.
Nope, said Lily.
It would be filled with pictures of the Carstairs family.
Alec said, Are you talking about Emma?
Lily frowned. Who's Emma?
Emma Carstairs, said Jace helpfully. She's Clary's pen pal who lives in L.A. Sometimes I write postscripts to Clary's letters and tell Emma handy knife tricks.
Emma's very good.
Emma was a single-minded force of destruction, which of course Jace liked. Jace fished out his phone and showed Lily a recent picture of Emma that Emma had sent Clary. Emma was holding her sword on a beach and laughing.
Lily breathed.
Cortana.
Alec glanced at her sharply.
I don't know Emma, Lily said. But I'd like to. I don't normally go for blondes, but she's hot. Bless the Cummins-Dare family. They never fail me. On that note, I'm off to admire the views in Buenos Aires.
Jem is married, you know, said Alec.
Don't leave me in charge, Elliot begged. You can't trust me. It's a terrible mistake. Lily ignored them both, but she caught Alec studying her as they left the hotel.
Don't look so worried, she said. Elliot probably won't burn the city down. When I get back, everybody will be so grateful that they'll do everything I say.
Leaving that fool in charge is part of my leadership strategy.
Alec nodded and didn't say that he was worried about her. There had been a time when Alec was unsettled by vampires, but Lily had always so clearly needed someone, and Alec had wanted to be there for her. They'd been teammates running the alliance with Maya for long enough now that Lily felt like Aline Penhallow, a friend close enough to be family. The thought of Aline sent a familiar pang through Alec. Aline had gone into exile on Wrangel Island to be with her wife, Helen. They had lived in that stony wasteland for years, just because Helen had fairy blood. Whenever Alec thought of Helen and Aline, he wanted to change everything about the way the Clave worked and bring them home. It wasn't only Aline and Helen. He felt that way about all the warlocks and vampires and werewolves and fairies who streamed to New York to talk to the Alliance because they couldn't go to their institutes. Every day he felt the same urge he'd felt on his first mission, when he saw Jason Isabel charge into a fight. "Protect them," he'd thought desperately, and lunged for his bow. Alec squared his shoulders. Worrying wouldn't help anyone. He couldn't save everybody, but he could help people. And now he intended to help Jem and Tessa. Brother Zachariah walked through the silent city, down corridors lined with bones. The ground was marked with the relentless passage of the Silent Brother's feet, of his own feet, moving in their accustomed path day after silent day, year after dark, endless year. He could not get out. Soon he would forget how it had ever been to live and love in the light. Every skull grinning at him from the wall was a thing more human than he. Until the darkness he'd thought inescapable was obliterated by consuming fire. The silver fire of Yin Fen had burned in him once, the worst burning the world had to offer. But this golden fire was remorseless as heaven. He felt as if he were being torn apart. Every burning atom of him weighed in the balance by a cruel god, and every piece found wanting. Even in the midst of agony, there was a small measure of relief. "This is the end," he told himself desperately, and was desperately thankful. At last, this is the end, after all that misery and darkness. He would die before his humanity was entirely crushed out. Finally, there might be rest. He might see his Parabatai again. Except with the thought of Will came the thought of another. He thought of soft, cool air drifting from the river, and her sweet, serious face unchanging as his own heart. With the thought of Will, he knew what Will would say. He could hear him, as if even the veil of death were burning between them and Will was shouting in his ear. "Jem, Jem, James Costes. You can't leave Tessa on her own. I know you better than you know yourself. I always did. I know you would never give up. Jem, hold on." He would not dishonor love by letting go. In the end, he chose to endure any pain rather than do that. Through the fire, as through the darkness, he held on. And impossibly, through fire and darkness and time, he survived. Jem woke, gasping. He was in a warm bed, with his wife in his arms. Tessa was still sleeping, on white sheets in the small whitewashed room they were renting in the small lodging house. She murmured, as Jem watched her, a soft string of incomprehensible words. She talked in her sleep, and every sound was a comfort. More than a century ago, he had wondered how it would be to wake up with Tessa. He had dreamed of it. Now he knew. Jem listened to her sweet, sleepy murmurs and watched the rise and fall of the white sheet with her breathing, and his body eased. Tessa's curling lashes stirred on her cheeks. "Jem?" she asked, and her hand found his arm, palm sliding down his skin. "I'm sorry," Jem said. "I didn't mean to disturb you."
"Don't be sorry," Tessa smiled sleepily.
Jem leaned over to the pillow beside his and kissed his wife's eyes closed, then watched them open again, clear and cool as river water. He kissed her cheek,
the eloquent curve of her mouth, her chin, and trailed his mouth hungrily down the line of her throat.
Tessa. Tessa? He murmured. Wo Yao Ni, I want you.
Tessa said,
yes.
Jem lifted the sheet and kissed the line of her collarbone, loving the taste of her soft, sleep-warm skin, loving every atom of her. He laid a trail of kisses for himself to follow all the way down her body. When he drew his mouth down the tender skin of her stomach, her hand slipped into his hair and fastened tightly there, anchoring him, encouraging him on. Her voice, no longer soft, made the walls ring with his name. She was all around him. All horror and pain was washed away. As night fell, Jem and Tessa lay facing one another on the bed, their hands entwined, their voices hushed. They could whisper and laugh all night together, and often had. It was one of Jem's great joys, just to lie with Tessa and talk for hours. But that required quiet and peace, which was not to be had tonight. Light exploded through their dim room, and Jem bolted upright, shielding Tessa from any possible threat. Words of shimmering blue and silver had appeared on the wall. Tessa sat up, tucking the sheet around her. "Message from Magnus," she said, twisting her hair up in a knot in the back of her head. The message said that Alec and Lily Chen were on their way to help. Once they had stowed their belongings at the Buenos Aires Institute, they would meet Tessa and Jem outside the walls of the Shadow Market. Jem met Tessa's gaze and read his own alarm in her eyes. "Oh no," said Tessa. Jem was already scrambling off the bed, searching for their clothes. "We have to find them. We have to stop them. They can't go to the Institute." The Buenos Aires Institute was located in the town of San Andres de Giles. To mundane eyes, the Institute looked like a large crypt standing in an abandoned cemetery, in a profusion of ghost-pale wildflowers. To Alec's eyes, it looked worse. It was a tall edifice, painted a dull rust color, but one wing of the building was a charred ruin. Alec had known the Institute was damaged during the Dark War, but he thought it would have been repaired long before. Lily sniffed the air. "They mixed blood in the paint." The Institute looked abandoned, except for the fact that there was a guard at the door. Even that made Alec's eyes narrow. Shadow hunters didn't typically keep watch on their own institutes, unless it was a time of war. He nodded to Lily, and they moved forward to meet the shadow hunters of Buenos Aires. The guard at the door looked a few years younger than Alec. His face was hard, his black eyebrows drawn sharply together, and he was squinting at them suspiciously. Said Alec. "Hola? Wait, that's Portuguese." Lily smiled a sunny, fanged smile at the guard. "Let me handle this."
"I can speak English,"
the guard told Alec hastily.
"Great," said Alec.
"I'm from the New York Institute. My name is..." The guard's dark eyes went wide.
"You're Alexander Lightwood!"
Alec blinked.
"That's me."
"I was in the Inquisitor's office once," the guard confided shyly. "He has a tapestry of you hanging up in there."
"Yeah," said Alec. "I know." "That's how I know what you look like. I'm so thrilled to meet you. I mean, it's such an honor. Oh no, what am I doing? I'm Joaquin Acosta Romero. It's a pleasure."
Joaquin held out his hand for Alec to shake. When Alec shook his hand, he felt the younger man vibrating slightly with excitement. He cast a panicked glance toward Lily, who grinned and mouthed, "Cute," at him. "This is Lily, who is no help," said Alec.
"Oh, yes. Oh, pleased to meet you, too," said Joaquin. "Wow, come in."
Lily smiled sweetly, showing her fangs.
"I can't."
"Oh, right. I'm sorry. I'll show you around to the back entrance. There's a door to the sanctuary there."
Magnus had enchanted the New York Institute so downworlders could walk in certain places there, but most institutes still kept them out of all but the sanctuary rooms. Alec was pleased to see Joaquin flash a smile at Lily that seemed genuine and welcoming. "Thanks," said Alec. "We're meeting friends on a mission, but I hoped we could stow our bags now so we could come back to sleep later.
We can set up cots in the sanctuary. Joaquin led them down a dark cobwebbed alley. Alec thought of the wing that was rubble. Possibly this institute wouldn't have cots.
Will your friend... Will she need a coffin? Asked Joaquin.
I don't think we have coffins. I mean, I'm sure I could find one somewhere. The head of our institute is, careful about visitors, but I'm sure he can't object to a guest who is coming with Alec Lightwood.
I don't need a coffin, said Lily. Just a windowless room. It's no problem.
You can address her when you're talking about her, said Alec mildly.
Joaquin cast an anxious look at Alec, then an even more anxious look at Lily.
Of course. I'm sorry. I don't have much experience talking to...
Vampires? Asked Lily sweetly.
Women, said Joaquin.
It's true, I'm 5 fabulous foot of pure woman, Lily mused.
Joaquin coughed.
Well, I don't know any vampires either. My mother died in the Dark War. A lot of us did. And afterward, most of the women left. Mr. Breakspear says that women aren't suited to the rigor of a tightly run institute.
He peered anxiously at Alec as if checking in on Alec's opinion on this.
Clary Fairchild is one of the heads of my institute, said Alec curtly.
Gia Penhallow is the leader of all shadow hunters.
Anyone who says women are weak is afraid they're too strong.
Joaquin nodded several times in rapid succession, though Alec wasn't sure if it was agreement or pure nerves.
I haven't been to any other institutes. When I turned 18, I was hoping I could go to one on my travel year, maybe even meet someone. But the head of our institute said I couldn't be spared. Not when the downworlders in the shadow market are so dangerous.
Joaquin hung his head. Alec was trying to phrase a question that wouldn't shock the boy further, about why this was such a harsh posting. About what exactly was going on with the Buenos Aires Institute. But before he could, they reached the end of the alley and the battered door to the sanctuary of the institute. It looked like the inside of a church that had suffered a blast, the long windows boarded up, the floor blackened. There was a man in the center of the charred floor, holding forth to a group of silent shadow hunter men. He looked about 40, his fair hair already turning silver, and he was the only one in the room wearing gear that was not patched or worn.
That's Clive Breakspear, the head of our institute, said Joaquin.
Sir, we have a visitor. It's Alexander Lightwood.
He said something in Spanish, which judging by the repetition of Alec's name, Alec thought was the same thing, then glanced around as if expecting an enthusiastic response. He didn't receive one. Several of the men in the circle seemed immediately wary. Clive Breakspear did not look wary at all.
So, you're Alec Lightwood, said the head of the Buenos Aires Institute slowly.
Then this must be your downworlder whore.
There was a terrible silence. It was broken by Lily, who blinked and said,
Excuse me, have you been living in a hole? Are you not aware Alec is dating famous warlock Magnus Bane and is not interested in ladies of any persuasion?
There was a rush of whispers. Alec didn't think everyone was stunned by this information. They were stunned that Lily would say it, as if they expected him to be ashamed. Let's be clear on this matter. This is my friend Lily, the head of the New York Vampire Clan. Alec put his hand on his serif blade, and the whispers hushed.
Think very carefully, said Alec, about how you wish to speak of her, or of Magnus Bane.
He almost said my fiancé, but it was an awkward word. Once he had said, my betrothed, and felt like a total idiot. He longed sometimes with an almost physical ache just to say, my husband, and have it be true.
I'm here on a mission, Alec continued. I thought I could rely on the hospitality of the Institute and my fellow shadow hunters. I see I was wrong.
He cast a look around the room. Several of the men could not meet his eyes.
What mission? Demanded Clive Breakspear.
One which requires discretion.
Alec regarded him steadily until Clive Breakspear flushed and looked away.
You can stay here, he agreed grudgingly. The downworlder cannot.
Like I want to, Lily sneered,
I don't stay in places where the decor isn't 10 out of 10, and this place is minus 14,000. Okay, Alec, let's make a plan for where we'll meet up after I find a nice windowless hotel room. Do you want to...
What are you talking about? Alec demanded. If they won't have you, I won't stay here. The hell with this place. I'm going with you.
Lily's face went soft for the space of time it took to blink. Then she patted his arm and said, Of course you are. She sniffed disdainfully and spun on her heel. Clive Breakspear barreled toward her.
I have some questions for you, Downworlder.
Alec caught his arm and stepped in front of Lily. Are you sure about that?
They were outnumbered, but Alec was the Inquisitor's son, Jace Herondale's Parabatai. He was protected in a way many others were not. That meant he had to use whatever he had for those who had no protection. After a long moment, Breakspear stepped back. Alec wished he could have thought of a really scathing exit line, but those weren't his specialty. He and Lily just left, Joaquin chasing after them.
By the angel, Joaquin said. I didn't expect that. I didn't think... I'm so sorry.
It's not the first institute I haven't been welcome in, said Alec, especially if he was with Magnus. It didn't happen often, but a couple of institutes before now had tried to separate them or made clear they shouldn't have come together. Alec always made clear what he thought of that.
I am so sorry,
Joaquin repeated helplessly. Alec nodded to him. Then Alec and Lily went out into the night. Alec stood with the blasted building at their backs and breathed in one long, deep breath.
Shadowhunters are trash, Lily announced.
Alec gave her a look.
Present company accepted.
And Jem, said Lily.
I'm having a terrible time in Buenos Aires. And I don't eat, but I'm in the mood for a delicious bowl of jambalaya.
He's married, Alec pointed out once again.
Please stop reminding me. She smells like books. I may be immortal, but life is too short to spend reading.
Lily paused for an instant, then added quietly.
Raphael liked her.
She and Ragnar Fell and Raphael used to have little meetings and tell each other secrets. Alec understood the tension in her voice now. Lily was slightly wary of Magnus, too, of anyone not in her clan whom she thought Raphael Santiago might have loved.
I told Jem we'd meet him outside the Shadow Market, said Alec, effectively distracting Lily. We can just carry our bags until we find a place to stay.
For now, let's see about this place which has the Buenos Aires Institute running scared, where only I can go.
Alec went to the New York Shadow Market on Canal Street with Magnus and Max fairly often, but the first time at a new Shadow Market as a Shadow Hunter could be tricky. The Buenos Aires Shadow Market looked more than tricky. Barbed wire was hung on every plank. The smooth, sun-bleached wood and snarled loops of barbed wire were an impenetrable stretch of silver. There was a large metal door in front of them, more suited to a prison than a market, and a werewolf's eyes shone behind a metal grill. He snapped something at them.
He said, "No shadow hunters,"
Lily interpreted cheerfully. There was a line of downworlders behind them, staring and murmuring. Alec felt a shadow of the old discomfort at being the focus of attention, and a sudden doubt about the information Jem had provided. I'm Alec Lightwood, he said. I hear that I'm allowed in. There was a stir behind his back, a brief silence, and then a rush of different sounding whispers, like listening to a tide turn.
You could just be another lying Nephilim.
The werewolf snarled, switching to English.
Can you prove you're Alec Lightwood?
Alec said, I can.
He took his hands out of his pockets and held up the right one to the grill so the werewolf could see it plainly. Scarred skin, calluses from his bow, the dark lines of his voyance rune, and moonlight striking and holding on the bright band of his family ring with its etched pattern of flames. Another set of eyes appeared at the grill, this pair of fairies, pupilless and green as woodland lakes fathoms deep. She said something soft in Spanish.
She says the magic in your ring is very strong,
Lily reported at his shoulder. Too strong. She says that kind of power comes from the very heart of hell.
Alec knew that was true. There was not only one charm in this ring, but spell after spell. Magic for protection and deflection, magic to guide his arrows and blades. All the power at Magnus's command poured into the metal. There was everything Magnus had been able to think of, to act as Alec's armor and ensure Alec would return home safe to him. Most important, there was the look on Magnus's face when he gave the enchanted ring to Alec and said he believed they would be married one day. "I know where this kind of power comes from," Alec raised his voice so that the whole murmuring crowd could hear. "I'm Alec Lightwood. Magnus Bane made this ring for me." The werewolf guard held open the door to the shadow market. Alec and Lily walked into a barbed wire tunnel. Alec could hear the sounds and glimpse the lights of a market, but the tunnel split off in two directions. The guard took them to the left, away from light and sound, into a shed lined with wards and metal. Broken weapons were fixed on the walls, and there was a roughly hewn circular platform in the center of the room, and on that platform a huge chair. There were crossed axes on the back of that chair, and a row of glittering spikes ran along the top. A slender fairy girl with wispy hair and a wistful face was sitting cross-legged at the foot of the throne. Upon the throne was a young woman who looked about Alec's age. She was wearing jeans and a flannel shirt, her legs swung carelessly over the throne's arm, the row of spikes glinting above her light hair. This must be the woman Jem had written about, the werewolf queen of the market. She saw Alec, and her face went blank. Then she started to smile and said in English, but with a distinct French accent,
"Alec, it's really you. I can't believe it."
This was very awkward. "Sorry," said Alec. "Have we met?" The werewolf swung her legs to the floor, leaning forward.
"I'm Juliet."
"I'm not Romeo," said Lily, "but you are cute, so tell us more about yourself in your sexy accent."
"Who are you?" asked Juliet.
"Lily Chen," said Lily. "Head of the New York vampire clan," added Alec.
"Oh, of course, from the Alliance," said Juliet. "Thank you for coming with Alec to help us. It's a real privilege to meet you."
Lily beamed.
"I know, right?"
Juliet's eyes went back to Alec. The way she was looking at him, wide-eyed and startled, did ring a faint bell.
"And this is my daughter, Rose,"
said Juliet the werewolf, her hands firm on the young fairy's shoulders. Alec didn't recognize the woman, but he recognized that tone of voice. He knew how it was to lay claim to what you loved, all the more insistently because people doubted the love that belonged to you. Alec wasn't sure what to say, so he did one of his favorite things. He produced his phone and found a really good picture, walked up to the dais, and showed it to them both. "This is my son, Max." Juliet and Rose leaned forward. Alec saw the werewolf's eyes flicker, saw the moment where it registered with Juliet that Max was a warlock.
"Oh," Juliet's voice was soft. "He's beautiful."
"I think so," said Alec shyly, and showed them a few more pictures. Alec found it difficult to select the best pictures. So many of them were great. It was hard to take a bad picture of Max. Juliet gave the adolescent fairy a push between the shoulder blades.
"Go get your brother and sister," she urged. "Quick!"
Rose sprang to her feet, fairy light, cast a last shy, sidelong glance at Alec, and ran out. "You know me," said Alec. "How?"
"You saved my life," Juliet said. 5 years ago, when demons attacked the Orient Express."
"Oh," said Alec. His and Magnus's first vacation. He tried not to think of the less pleasant aspects of that trip, but he remembered the train, the warm falling water and the shine of demons' eyes, the screaming wind and the abyss below. He had been terrified for Magnus that night.
"You fought demons on the Orient Express?" Lily asked with interest.
"I fight demons in lots of places," said Alec. "It was all very normal."
"I had never seen anything like it in my life," Juliet told Lily enthusiastically. "There were so many demons. They broke the windows. I thought I was about to be killed. Then Alec took out every demon he saw. He was soaking wet,
and he wasn't wearing a shirt.
Alec didn't see how that was relevant. Very normal, Alec repeated. Except normally I wear a shirt. Lily's eyes were dancing with glee.
What a wild time you seem to have on holiday, Alec.
I had a totally standard and boring time, Alec told her.
Sounds like it.
And I was at that party in Venice, Juliet continued, when the mansion collapsed.
I was there too, said Lily.
Raphael was super sad to be at a party. It was hilarious.
I made out with so many people. It was a personal record. I think one of them was a hot blonde.
Was it you? Juliet blinked.
No. I don't really make out with girls.
Lily shrugged. Sorry you're wasting your life.
I don't either, Alec commented mildly. Juliet nodded.
I remember Magnus at that party too. He was trying to help.
Alec heard his own voice go low and tender, entirely out of his control.
He always does.
There was a clatter of feet behind them. Rose, the fairy girl, had returned. There were two more kids hand in hand with her now, another fairy girl with the sturdy build of a goblin, and a dark-skinned warlock boy with a foxtail. They ran up to the chair and clustered about Juliet. The girl looked about 10 and the boy no more than 6.
Kids, said Juliet. This is Alec Lightwood, whom I've told you about. Alec, these are my kids.
Hi, said Alec. The kids stared.
When you saved me on the Orient Express, said Juliet, I asked how I could repay you, and you said you'd seen a fairy child alone in the Paris Shadow Market. You asked me if I could look out for her. I had never spoken to a shadow hunter before. I didn't think they were like you. I was surprised you asked me that. So when I got back to Paris, I went looking for her. My Rosie and I have been together ever since.
She ruffled Rose's wispy hair around Rose's crown of horns. Rose flushed green.
Maman, do not embarrass me in front of Alec Lightwood.
The Paris Shadow Market Alec and Magnus had visited on their first vacation together had been Alec's first market ever. The Downworlders hadn't been used to him then, and he hadn't been used to them. He did recall the fairy child he had seen there, how skinny she'd been, and how sorry he'd been for her. She'd been the same age as his baby brother, whom Max was named for. Unlike his brother, she had lived to be older.
Rose, Alec said, how grown up you are now.
Rose beamed.
We were happy together in Paris, you and I, weren't we, ma petite? Juliet asked Rose, sounding wistful. I thought the end of the war with Valentine would be an end to all wars. But then there was another war, and so many shadow hunters died, and so many fairies, too. And the cold peace began.
She fixed her eyes on Alec. The light above the throne caught her eyes, like headlights catching the eyes of a wolf.
I heard about you and Magnus, and the Shadowhunter and Downworlder alliance you'd set up. You were both helping people. I wanted to do that too. I heard about people hunting fairies in Belgium, and I got my youngest girl out.
Rose's hands closed on the goblin girl's shoulders. Alec recognized that gesture too. The constant worry of the oldest in the family. The knowledge that you were responsible for the younger ones.
Then I heard about Buenos Aires, said Juliet. The Institute here was crushed in the Dark War. Downworlders who fled to Europe told dark stories of what had risen from the wreckage. I came to see if there was anything I could do.
The little boy lifted his arms to her, and Juliet picked him up, cuddling him on her knee. The boy watched Alec, sucking thoughtfully on the tip of his foxtail.
There were a lot of children orphaned in the war, said Juliet. The shadow market here became a kind of refuge for unwanted children. A haphazard kind of orphanage, among the stalls and lights and magic. The market became a community, because we needed one. A market that never ceased. People lived inside these walls. My baby was left here, because he manifested his warlock mark so young.
So did Max, said Alec.
There are so many kids.
Juliet closed her eyes. What's wrong with this institute? Alec asked. Why hasn't someone reached out to the Clave?